Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Jurassic World Dominion, Block Party, and the series Ms. Marvel, Dark Winds, and Prehistoric Planet. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Shazam, the TV show from the 70s. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Somebody took issue with me a couple weeks ago because I had made a comment in the show about Top Gun Maverick being a kind of retread of the original Top Gun, even to the point of almost hard to tell whether the opening footage is the same footage from 1986 or now. And somebody took issue with that because they said, well, you know, they're obviously different jets and those are F-14s. I don't know the jets. And, well, here's the thing. I'm not a Navy guy. I've not been in the military. I've not worked with jets. And I don't know anything about jet technology. To me, it's a great plane. I mean, that's just my layman's approach to it. So my apologies if that seemed insensitive, but I don't know the difference between a modern fighter jet or one from 30 years ago. I've not been in them. I've not flown them. And to my passing eye, it almost looks the same. And the point being, I even went back and I found some articles like EW, Entertainment Weekly, had a whole discussion about this where they talked to the director. And he said that he was trying to make it look exactly like the first movie. And there have been other articles written about this, about how it's, you know, almost looks the same. So I'm not the only one who saw that. But it brings to a bigger picture. You know, people are going to disagree about movies. And anyone who's listened to the show knows enough that I was not a huge fan of, well, the original Top Gun I wasn't a huge fan of. But I also wasn't a huge fan of this new one. I mean, sure, fine, it's a big summer movie and it's a blockbuster and it's a very big crowd pleaser. But, you know, there are things I didn't like about it, and it's imperfect, because all movies are imperfect when you really get down to it. And when it comes to movies, movies are a form of art, and they're a form of entertainment, and they're very subjective to what the viewer is experiencing. So everybody brings their own experiences to it, and everybody looks at it through their own lens. No matter who you are, and no matter how similar your taste of movies are with somebody, you're going to find something you disagree with. There's movies I absolutely love that I know people can't stand, and vice versa. There's movies that I dearly love that other people can't stand. So that happens. So, you know, just realize movies are subjective, and there's bigger things going on in this world than getting upset because somebody doesn't share your opinion. One piece of interesting news, and I'm bringing this to the top of it in terms of movie news, is I don't know if you knew this, but last week, Sony had the brilliant idea to put Morbius back into more theaters last week. Partly because it was a slow week, there was no big blockbuster opening, but partly because they saw a huge engagement online. Now, if you don't know what's going on in sort of like that Generation Z zeitgeist, I have a little bit of a window into that because I got two sons I got three sons, but two of them, one's 21 and one's 19, and they're plugged into the online community to that stuff. Apparently what had happened, which evolves in social media, is there became this meme generation of Morbius memes. And it's the basic outline is Morbius was such a flop and such a terrible movie that people ironically were playing it like it was the greatest movie ever. And it was a movie that would bring people back to life, and it made $500 trillion more than any other movie has ever made on the planet. And it's become ridiculous. And they're like talking about people chanting it's Morbin time. And so Morbius blew up on social media. And of course, the idiots at Sony were like, oh, well, that must mean people want to see the movie. So they put it in 1,000 more theaters. It didn't work. It completely flopped again. I mean, this is a movie that has bombed twice in its initial run. And it's because they misread the idea, because they didn't realize that people were talking about Morbius as a joke. They just saw engagement on social media, and they're like, oh, social media, that means kids are going to go see it. And I don't know, maybe they thought, well, the memes are popular, maybe people will go see it, but people are going to plop down 10 or 15 or 20 bucks to go see this. It's like that stupid Nicole Kidman opening thing in AMC theaters. Nobody would pay to see that. They just think it's hilarious when it plays. And it's all in an ironic sense. It's not true love for that product. Sony missed its mark. You know what? They misread the entire room. What they should have done is worked out a quick deal with Netflix, in particular Netflix, to get this on a streaming service as fast as possible. And it needs to be on something like Netflix that people see as free. Netflix is not free. You pay anywhere from like 12 to 20 bucks a month for it, but people have it. And so they don't think of it as an added charge, and you don't have to pay extra to see it. You just turn it on and it's there. And if they got it on Netflix, you know, within the next week or so, it would be the most watched thing, because then people would see it for free, quote unquote, for free. And then people would watch it and be hilarious about it. And they'd live tweet it and they'd stand there and go, it's Morbin time, because the irony is not worth the money you'd pay for the confiscatory rate. I mean, I know Morbius is on demand right now, but nobody's going to pay $20 to do this, but they'll watch it on Netflix for free. That's why if you ever go to Netflix, you look at the top 10. Yeah, it's usually the buzzworthy stuff, but every now and then it's like some crappy movie from 2014 shows up that was completely off the radar, yet somehow becomes one of the top 10 movies. If Sony would have gone to Netflix, they really could have made something out of this Morbius meme thing, and now it's just made them a joke. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Prey, which is the latest Predator movie, and it's coming to Hulu on August 8th.
There's something out there. I'm coming with you.
You can't.
I'm trying to protect you.
Protect me from what?
It knows how to hunt. I know how to survive. Whatever did this, I can kill it.
You know, as much as I like the Predator idea, I am not interested in watching just a retread of the original movie. And I think that they've really missed the boat on these Predator movies. While this movie looks like it's fine, it looks like it's going to be well done, but it looks like it's just the Native American version of the original Predator movie. And do something more with it. And every time they've tried to do something more with it, with like the Predator versus Alien stuff, or even Shane Black's Predator movie, it just really missed the mark. But I liked the idea of what he was trying to do, and I liked the idea of evolving the Predator into something. But if all we're doing is making another movie about people hunting the Predator and vice versa in the jungle, I mean, yeah, it might be fine to watch, but it doesn't like break any new ground. So I'm a little disappointed in where they're going with this. The next one I want to talk about is Black Adam, which is in theaters on October 21st.
I was a slave until I died. Then I was reborn a god. My son sacrificed his life to save me. Now I kneel before no one.
You have two choices. You can be the destroyer of this world, or you can be its savior.
I'm curious to see how this is going to work. And now they've got characters like they got Hawkman in here, and they've got some other DC characters in this movie, but I'm just wondering how it's going to fit in, because DC is just all over the map. There is no centralized focus to this cinematic universe. And even if you go back to the original story of Black Adam, Black Adam was a bad guy in the Captain Marvel. I mean, Captain Marvel, the original Captain Marvel from Fawcett Comics with Billy Batson. And I mean, it looks like it might be a fun action movie, but I don't know how it figures into anything in the DC universe. It's such a mess over there. They don't know what they're doing. So, I mean, it might be an interesting, fun action movie. We'll see in October. Coming up next, I've got a couple reviews coming up with Block Party and Dark Winds on Fat Guys at the Movies. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Block Party. The woman who runs an annual block party in Michigan brings in her Harvard-educated granddaughter to help organize the 40th celebration this year due to her failing cognitive state.
What makes you think I'll just pick up the phone and call? What could compel me to do that?
Movies refresh your memory.
Consider my memory refreshed.
Good old-fashioned family barbecue, huh?
I'm shutting you and your sizzle down.
With my dead sexy body.
Just because you got the Anita Baker haircut don't mean you know what Anita Baker went through.
This is, oddly enough, co-produced by BuzzFeed and BET. So this actually opened on Wednesday this week. So it's been out for a couple days. And I think on the 16th, if I'm not mistaken, it appears on BET and their streaming service. It's also coordinated to fall right around Juneteenth, because Juneteenth is on June 19th, but Juneteenth is on a weekend, so it's going to be observed on the 20th, but it's focusing on Juneteenth as a holiday. Of course, I don't need to explain what Juneteenth was. It just got made into a national holiday last year or the year before. You should know what it is by now. But this is the first big Juneteenth movie I think we've seen since it became a holiday, and it's about a community festival, and it's about a family getting together, and it's a mostly African-American community where they do this block party, and the woman who runs it, she's been doing it for 40 years, but she hasn't done a very good job this year, and a lot of this falls on her granddaughter's shoulder, who's got to try and make this thing happen in like a week. So it's a movie about family and community and doing things for each other to help each other out and to take on the responsibility. It's got an uplifting approach to it. It's got an uplifting message. So it's very much geared towards that, the close-knit family, you know, the neighborhood, and not in a negative sense. This was really low on my radar, and then I got an opportunity to see it, and I watched it, and I was like, you know what? This is actually kind of a sweet little movie. I mean, it does fall into cliche, and we've seen a lot of the stuff before, because, you know, the girl is coming back from Harvard, and she's got a new job she has to start, and she kind of delays that in order to do this block party festival, and then there's somebody who's wanting them, like a fire marshal wants to shut them down because they had to cut some corners on permits. Because they can't do it exactly the way they've done it in the past. And of course, trying to find performers and vendors and that sort of thing. You know, all the hoops you have to jump through to put a community festival like this on. But you know what? I got to admit, it's a nice, heartfelt movie. I think its heart's in the right place. I think, like many movies, it does show, recently we've seen a lot of these about people with dementia and cognitive issues, because that's a real thing that people are becoming more and more aware of. And every generation becomes aware of that and suddenly has to face it. And right now it's like my generation, you know, Generation X, and then the millennials right after us, that are suddenly discovering that their elders need care. You may have to do unique living arrangements, and you're facing down the insane costs of stuff like care facilities and nurses. So this is a movie that does have the awareness of that, but it doesn't weigh heavily on it. I mean, obviously it's a clear plot point to it, and it's the story of coming home and having to resolve your issues with your parents and resolve your issues with the people you grew up with and live with. And especially for somebody who's left and gone to another life, because I think the granddaughter has moved to like Atlanta or something like that. So that's a ways away from Grand Rapids, Michigan. But, you know, ultimately, like I said, it does what it needs to do, and it's entertaining, and it has some funny moments. It gets a little bit corny, but you know what? The way things are in the world today, I can use a little bit of corniness, as long as it's not too corny. And this one's not too corny. It's meant to be fun, and I had a fun time watching it, so I'm going to have to say that Block Party kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next thing I want to talk about is Dark Winds, which I've been responsible for some dark winds in my time. The supernatural thriller follows an armored car heist in 1971 that moves through the Navajo Nation and results in several mysterious deaths.
So no leads, no idea who may have done such a terrible thing.
You hear about this armored car robbery? Eyewitnesses place that hijacked chopper headed into Navajo country.
Thought we were talking about a double homicide.
We're talking about both.
Anna died of cardiac arrest.
She was 20 years old.
The coroner said that she was scared to death. I promise you, I'll find who did this to her.
She's a witness, but she's blind.
What'd she have to say?
There might have been two men.
Find that money.
We cracked this case.
This is on AMC, the cable station, and it's going to be funneled into AMC Plus, similar to how Better Call Saul and Fear of the Walking Dead and The Walking Dead all have premiered on AMC and then are moving on to their streaming service. And this actually doesn't premiere until Sunday evening on AMC, and then, of course, it'll be on AMC Plus after that. So you're getting a real early preview of this, and they're going to be dropping an episode every Sunday night. It's one of these, well, modern, and I put that in quotes because it takes place 50 years ago. It takes place in 1971, but it's a modern Western. I mean, it's not the old West town with the ramshackled shacks and the sheriff, you know, with the big bushy mustache or anything like that. It is a modern Western, the way something like Yellowstone is, where, you know, it takes place out West. This one, of course, takes place in the Navajo Nation. A good chunk of it takes place in Monument Valley, which is in the Navajo Nation. And it is the tight-knit family groups and the distrust that the members of the Navajo Nation have for the white man. Because if you don't know anything about politics in an Indian reservation or an Indian nation, that's their own country. It's essentially its own land. It's the reservations and the nation that's set off as separate from the U.S. So they have tribal police and they run everything themselves. And it tells it from the point of view of the sheriff. And he's got a dark past with some of the victims of this. And it's also this FBI agent who's trying to infiltrate the local sheriff's department to learn more about this armored car robbery that had happened. So it's got, you have these two crimes that appear completely unrelated, but they're colliding. And in the midst of all this is something sinister, something darker, something spiritual that's going on behind the scenes that is very dangerous and, again, very dark. You know, the show is called Dark Winds. But it's not like chupacabras and witch doctors from the get-go or anything like that. It slowly builds that stuff, and it plays on the superstitions and the religion of the Navajo Nation and the degrees of how much you believe. But it's very veiled. It's just sort of just kind of really in the background in the first couple episodes. And of course it expands as it goes on. So this is a slow burn, as you see in these kind of modern Westerns. But I mean, I find it intriguing. I mean, these shows are always very drab and heavy, and they're dealing with dark issues and heavy emotions. You know, it's not an uplifting thing to watch. But it is a very slow burn. I mean, it takes its time. And I think there's about 5 episodes of it that are going to be aired. At least that's as far as I've seen. So it's worth seeing if you know what you're getting into. If you like that sort of modern slow burn Western, you should enjoy this one. So I'm going to say Dark Winds kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
When we come back, I'm going to be talking about Jurassic World Dominion and Prehistoric Planet. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the big movie of the weekend, and that is going to be Jurassic World Dominion. After dinosaurs have been let loose worldwide, the heroes of the events of Jurassic Park return to help stop a biotech company from creating greater threats.
Genetic power has now been unleashed.
We made a terrible mistake.
Doomsday clock might be about out of time.
If our world's gonna survive, what matters is what we do now.
I could use your expertise.
You coming or what?
baby raptor?
I made a promise we would bring her home.
You made a promise to a dinosaur?
Yeah.
I was a huge fan of the original Jurassic Park. It came out in 1993. It's been almost 30 years since the original Jurassic Park came out. And arguably, that is still the best of all the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World movies. And it makes sense. It's Steven Spielberg doing a monster movie, which he's very, very good at. And it was groundbreaking at the time. In fact, you watch the original Jurassic Park now, and the effects, for the most part, I mean, there's some stuff that looks a little off because we've had 30 years of VFX development. But, I mean, pretty much you can rewatch Jurassic Park now, and it still looks fantastic. It's still very realistic looking and authentic. The rest of the movies, they've always struggled to be what the original was. And I mean, the sequel was a mess because it was Michael Crichton writing a sequel because he had to. And it was Steven Spielberg directing a sequel because he had to. And you get kind of this movie with more dinosaurs and more actions and more dinosaurs stomping on people. But the heart's not there. And then I actually like Jurassic Park 3. For as much as that movie gets maligned, I enjoy that one because it did have that essence of Jurassic Park. You're stuck on an island trying to escape these massive predators that haven't been on the planet for millions and millions of years. Then it disappeared for a while. And when they did Jurassic World back in 2015, I think, that was such a massive hit. And it was a surprise hit because all the people that were in their 20s when that movie came out were kids when Jurassic Park came out, and they watched that on cable and VHS for years. So it kind of hit a sweet spot. And even though Jurassic World was entertaining, it still wasn't nearly as good as the original Jurassic Park. But Fallen Kingdom was a mess. And now they've got Jurassic World Dominion. And the biggest problem I have with this, yes, you've got the dinosaur action. I'll just go ahead and get that out of the way. You got dinosaurs. You got people getting eaten by dinosaurs. And yes, the dinosaurs look fantastic. Why? Because we're 30 years past Jurassic Park, and we've learned how to make dinosaurs look cool on the big screen. But good special effects do not a great movie make. And in a sense, the dinosaurs are secondary supporting characters anyways in this movie. They're all kind of background. And yeah, they come in there and there's attacks and there's stalking of the... But you don't feel like they're a main character to this. They're just sort of like dangers in the background. It's like you're going through this video game and they're just the bad guys that you got to avoid and shoot, you know, throughout. So you don't have that personal attack feel you had in the original Jurassic Park. The other thing is, back when Michael Crichton wrote his book, which I can't remember when it came out, in 1989, 1990, something like that. There was a real It Could Happen feel to it. I mean, that's something that Michael Crichton prided himself on when he did these techno thrillers. He made these movies that could really happen. You know, you watch that and he said, even though it's nonsense that DNA could last that long because it breaks down within like 5,000 years, but you're watching and going, oh my God, I can almost believe they could clone dinosaurs. This isn't just some silly thing where it's like dinosaurs that nobody ever knew still existed, that survived the extinction, or they found dormant eggs. He actually put together a scientific platform that you're like, gosh, this could really happen, even though it couldn't. It's still hogwash, but it was very believable hogwash. By the time you get to this movie, it's gone full Pulp Fiction. It's gone full goofy, crazy cartoon dinosaurs living amongst us. You've got some really great scenes. Like, it opens up with Chris Pratt basically herding dinosaurs and roping them in the wild, almost like wild horses. And that's really cool to watch, but it you've lost the whole It Could Happen. And then when they got these biotech companies, they're like one of the things they do, they create these locusts that are the size of house cats. Who the heck wants to create locusts the size of house cats? No matter what the purpose of them is, that's a bad idea. And it's so muddled because now they've got, and it's neat that they brought back the legacy characters, but that adds just three whole characters into it. And you're trying to fit them all together and give them something. So you got multiple things going on. I mean, the plot is all over the place. And at the same time, just retreading the original plot of the movie. And it's great to see the legacy people back. I love seeing Sam Neill back. I love seeing Jeff Goldblum. I'm not wild. Laura Dern, I said it's funny. My wife went to the screening with me, and I said to her as we were driving home, I said, there's a smugness about everything that Laura Dern plays. No matter what character she is, she just comes across as smug. She was smug in this. She was smug in Star Wars. She was smug in A Marriage Story. Everything I've seen her in, she just kind of has this smug snot face. And I'm like, ah, you're not acting anymore. I don't think Laura Dern acts anymore. She's almost like, oh, thank you. I'm Laura Dern. I'm just going to play a version of myself. Ha ha. Aren't you lucky to have me? And even her character just, her character, I don't know, it's just given too much gravitas in this movie. So I'm not a big fan of Laura Dern in this, but I like seeing the three people back together. I mean, it's entertaining, sure, but I mean, the story is all over the map and it's goofy as all get out. But if all you want to see is dinosaur action and some cool special effects and some neat action, it's there. It's just not a good, solid, cohesive, monumental movie that, gosh, even Jurassic World was, and that was just a pale imitation of Jurassic Park. But still, I'm going to say Jurassic World Dominion kind of rocks, because if all you want to do is see dinosaurs, they're there, and it looks good.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about another dinosaur thing, and that is on Apple TV. It's Prehistoric Planet. This BBC Earth-style documentary looks at the lives of various dinosaurs in their natural environment.
There are many ways to describe life on this planet. Some creatures could be called magnificent or monstrous, perhaps misunderstood. But only a few creatures who roam this Earth called all three.
If you really want to see a dinosaur thing this weekend, get Apple TV Plus. I mean, it's like $5 or $6 a month. Just get the trial. My God, you're going to spend $40 just to walk in the door of Jurassic World Dominion and another $80 to buy snacks. Go get Apple TV. And they have this show called Prehistoric Planet. It is done in the style of a BBC Earth documentary, even to the point that they've got David Attenborough narrating it. And it's beautiful shots of landscapes, and then they put dinosaurs in this. And they shoot it like they took cameras out there and watched a clutch of pterodons developing and hatching and flying. It's fascinating. And there's like 5 episodes in them. They're 45 minutes long each. And they have all these different types. They go everything from the water dinosaurs to the ones that live on land, in the forest, and in the snow, and in the desert. Each episode is a different biome. And the special effects are really good. You know, like I said, there's been 30 years of dinosaur technology in the CGI department. But it's a realistic looking thing. And there's a couple shots and elements that seem a little contrived. But it plays out like a real, honest to God, nature documentary. It's fascinating to watch. It's just, it's dinosaurs. And I think it's brilliant that they've gotten to that point that you can watch it and your mind's actually accepting it as real. And so honestly, Prehistoric Planet is a better piece of dinosaur entertainment than Jurassic World Dominion. Now this has been out for a couple of weeks. I think it came out on Memorial Day weekend, but it's worth seeing. Totally find it on Apple TV Plus, worth your time. And I really enjoyed it. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
And that wraps up our angle on dinosaurs. I want to talk about some superhero stuff because we've got the Ms. Marvel show to talk about and also the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the original Shazam TV show from the 1970s. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into some superhero stuff. And let's talk about the latest Marvel series on Disney Plus, and that is Ms. Marvel. Ms. Marvel, whoa. A Pakistani-American teenager who fangirls about Captain Marvel discovers her own cosmic powers from her family heirlooms.
Maybe they're right. I spend too much time in fantasy land.
That is not you.
It's not really the brown girls from Jersey City. You save the world. That's a fantasy too.
something happen to you?
No, why? Did you hear something?
Come on out.
What does it feel like?
Cosmic.
Disney Plus has been bouncing back and forth between doing Marvel series and Star Wars series because those are the highest profile franchises that they're expanding into new territory. They just started the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, and now they've overlapped it with Ms. Marvel. And then coming up, of course, we got stuff like the Baymax series, and we've got She-Hulk coming up, and we've got the Andor series. So they're going to be going back and forth, and they found that this is probably a good way to sustain subscribers so they can bill $1 billion a month. And honestly, I think that this is a great format to develop these series. I think it's a great format mainly because that goes back to what the roots of what Marvel is. Marvel was episodic storytelling. It's a comic book every month or every 2 months, and it told a story so that it was self-contained, and then they'd have crossovers and that. So how they've sort of set this up with all these things on Disney Plus, and they're the only arbiters of this. They don't have to worry about a studio or advertisers or anything. They just need to make the shows, and then people pay for the streaming service. And this is actually a really great direct payment version of entertainment. You don't have to worry about advertisers. You just buy the service and you get the stuff. And I think that's great. I've heard some complaints about this saying, oh, it's turning it into a Disney Channel type series. And my response to that is, well, yeah, of course. What's wrong with that? I mean, the comic books back in the day, you know, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, those were not all geared towards 18 to 35-year-old men. They were geared towards kids, and they had female heroes and male heroes, and they even had diverse characters. You know, that's why you can go back and find characters like Black Panther and Shang-Chi and Ms. Marvel. You know, Kamala Khan is a character from the book. Now, I think, I don't know much about the original story, but I think they've changed her story a little bit to kind of fit more into what they're trying to do in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And she'll show up at some point. But not every show has to be WandaVision or Loki, where it's this heavy-duty anchoring the movies necessarily. This is a neat little fun show. And I gotta say, it's charming, and it's got heart, and it's got wit. And the girl who plays Kamala Khan is really good. She's not your typical superhero character, and that's good. I mean, there's a little bit of diversity there. She doesn't have the body like, and I know she's a teenager in this, but she doesn't like fit into a suit the way that like Scarlett Johansson does. She looks a little awkward as she's trying to put together her outfit, and that's good because that's realism there. You know, I mean, I think it's kind of cool that they're playing around with more than just your standard superhero stuff that you would expect. And the story, it's really a story of discovery because it's her discovering she has these powers and accessing them and then figuring out how to use them. And it's sort of like it takes a page out of Spider-Man, where Spider-Man is this dorky teenager who gets spider powers and has to figure out how to use them. She's not a billionaire with a supersuit or a space god or a rage monster or something like that. And she's like Captain Marvel, a lesser known character, so it's okay to give a history and a background and story to her, and that works for me. And she's got a sidekick who's this guy, she's a friend of hers, and the kid who plays him, basically, if you were to take Matt Smith and Dan Bird and morph them together as a teenage boy, that's what you got. I mean, this is very much what this character's like. I gotta say, I really thought Ms. Marvel works. It clicks. It's different than everything else that you're seeing out there in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and that's okay. The fact that they can make movies and characters and stories and TV shows and other outlets different enriches the movies. And now we're getting to the point where there are people complaining there's just too much stuff. That's a good problem to have. Oh my gosh, there's too many Marvel things to watch. I just don't have time. Well, that's okay. And it's better than when they were putting these TV series on like ABC with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or when they were trying to fit them into the Netflix model, but they were dealing with two different studios pulling them in different directions. It's good that they can just streamline these as they want. I had a lot of fun with Ms. Marvel, and I think she's a great character. I can't wait to see what more they have in store for her. I'd love to see a crossover between her character and Hailee Steinfeld's character in Hawkeye, because they kind of are cut from the same cloth but have very different powers. So I'm looking forward to seeing what goes on with Ms. Marvel. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Yay! You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the Home Cinema Roundup. Today's spotlight is on a show I found in a deep dive on Tubi. I have a friend in broadcasting who got a real kick out of me using the term deep dive into Tubi. Tubi TV, of course, is a free app that's just loaded with stuff. Now, I mean, you got to sit through commercials, but it's free. You don't need to subscribe to a service. You can set up an account and put in a, you know, a watch list or whatever. But if you want to find obscure TV shows and movies from the past, I mean, yeah, they have more recent hits as well, but they got a lot of stuff from the 70s and 80s and 90s, and even before that, like 60s and 50s, you can find like the Beverly Hillbillies on there and that kind of thing. And I found the old original Shazam TV show, which was made in 1975. And I think that was right around the time DC Comics purchased it. But Shazam was originally published by Fawcett Comics, was sued into oblivion by DC because it was Captain Marvel was a ripoff of Superman, they determined. But back in the day, in 1975, they made this series, and it was on Saturday mornings. I remember seeing when I was a kid, because they replayed it a lot throughout the 70s. So in Shazam, based on the original Captain Marvel from the comics, Billy Batson and his mentor travel America, helping out people, kind of like BJ and the Bear, but without the chimpanzee.
Chosen from among all others by the immortal elders Solomon, Hercules, Atlas, Zeus, Achilles, Mercury, Billy Batson and his mentor travel the highways and byways of the land on a never-ending mission to right wrongs, to develop understanding, and to seek justice for all. In time of dire need, young Billy has been granted the power by the immortals to summon awesome forces at the utterance of a single word.
Back in the 70s and 80s, there were a whole bunch of these stories of people traveling around helping people, and there was always a gimmick. Like BJ and the Bear, they drove a truck, and it was a guy with his chimpanzee. The TV series The Master, which was highlighted on Mystery Science Theater, it was this guy named Max who drove around with his friend who was a master ninja played by Lee Van Cleef, and they had a hamster. And in this series, you've got his mentor, who's played by this old guy with a mustache, who sort of remotely resembles Uncle Dudley from the original Captain Marvel stories. But Billy Batson is, I mean, in the original stories, he was a newspaper kid, and then he did radio work. And in this one, I guess they just drive. And they find people who need help, and there's always a message. And at the end, Captain Marvel flies in and gives a little moral to the story. I mean, it was made for Saturday morning cartoon. It was like, it aired like at the end of the block of cartoon programming where they sort of merged it into live action stuff. There was an Isis character who was the Captain Marvel Isis hour that they put this on. And you can find old comic books that advertise this in their Saturday morning lineups. This is corny as all get out, but you know what? It is kind of fun. It's completely a nostalgia thing. If you were not a kid in the 70s and you didn't watch these live action type shows, I mean, it was like the Incredible Hulk series, but distilled down into a very kid-like digestible thing. So it's not complex stories, and it's always about a kid in trouble. Like there's one where these kids are, you know, maybe steal from somewhere. There's this one girl who wanted to save this horse from being destroyed because this one guy wanted to get rid of it because it hurt his partner or something like that. So it was always some kid that they were attaching to, but there was tons of these live action Saturday morning shows that are a lot of fun for me to revisit. And I'm sure people in my generation, my kids don't care. They're into watching the stuff that they watched in the early part of the 2000s. But for me, Shazam was a lot of fun. I'm going to say it kind of rocks. You can find it on Tubi TV. Check it out.
It kind of rocks.
Other things that are happening in home cinema this week, you've got The Northman in 4K on disc, but you also have it on Peacock. And then on VOD, there's new releases of Everything Everywhere All at Once and The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. And then finally on HBO Max, we finally have season 13 of Doctor Who, which is the last full season with Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor before they started doing the one-off TV movies that they're doing right now. And that's it. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the new films Lightyear and Good Luck with You, Leo Grand. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.